Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the breakdowns post whatever that was, UCP leadership race conversation about everything that happened there. Hopefully we're going to be joined in just a little bit by the incomparable Deirdre Mitchell McLean, and boy, are we going to be opening up the floor to anybody who has some thoughts tonight, because wow, did we just see some things unfold. So There's a lot to talk about tonight. One of the biggest things has to be, though, and I think this is one of the things that we have to talk about, is the acceptance speech by Danielle Smith. Now, we're going to get into the nuts and the bolts of how did things get to where they are in just a little bit. But watching Danielle Smith's acceptance speech was really quite something to behold. And there were a couple of things that jumped out to me in particular. And again, right under the gates here, I'm going to say to anybody who has anything that they want to say, anything that they want to share, absolutely, please jump in. Just click that little microphone in the bottom left-hand corner of your mobile device, and we'll get you involved. But I got to say, I've seen some things in the Alberta politics realm. I've seen some fascinating things happen. I have never seen anything quite as chilling as Danielle Smith preemptively telling everybody who was watching her speech, there's going to be some people who say a lot of things about me and my policies, and they're lying. There's going to be experts who say things about my policies, and they're lying. That was, to me, beyond chilling. There's something deeply, deeply alarming going on when you have the leader of a province preemptively saying, hey, there's this dumpster fire of things that I've said and done. Just ignore them. And they're all lies anyways, especially for somebody who just stood up and talked about accountability. But we're going to get the show on the road already. We've got Deirdre Mitchell McLean joining us. And I see as well, we have a speaker already, and I'm excited to hear from her in just a sec after we get the initial impressions from Deirdre. What the hell, Deirdre? What happened?
What happened? Well, I have a dog barking I'm trying to run away from here. So.
I hope he's slow.
I think he's outside. So initial impressions. You know, I tried to remain optimistic that there was a possibility that we wouldn't get the outcome we did. I thought her speech was, I'm back.
I got to ask you a question, Deirdre. I don't mean to jump in here, but there was one part of the speech where I was like still in shock from some of the other things that she said. And I need to know, because I haven't been able to find a video of it yet, because we literally typed out the last tweets and then bang, here we go.
Yeah.
Did she or did she not say that she was going to make Alberta the freest country in the world? Because I swear to God, I heard her say freest country in the world.
Oh, that's scary. Thanks, Nate.
Right? It was like one of those things where I thought I heard her say it. And I was like, I tried to rewind on the live stream, but of course they changed their live stream platform, so you can't do that. And I just kind of sat there and I looked at the person who was in the room with me, and I was like, did you just hear that? And they were like, I'm not sure what I just heard. So I'm really looking forward to getting a playback of that. And if anybody else heard her say country or province, boy, do I want to be corrected on this one. But Deirdre, what else? Give me some broad strokes, then we're going to get some speakers in here.
Okay. So, you know, I think she had a lot of confidence. I am more concerned, oddly enough, about what she said, you know, about how Alberta is going to lead uniting the country. Like, I was like, that's kind of scary, actually.
There was a lot of scary in there. Right?
Considering how we normally refer to the rest of Canada, that did concern me. Exactly. There were so many things that were concerning. The part about AHS was it
Well, she said she's going to move swiftly. She was going to move swiftly. And she said that she mandated AHS to increase the double the number of ICU beds in the province. Okay. She expected it to happen. And if they couldn't, then she would find somebody who did. But again, that's riffing on that lie that AHS never identified the capacity. Like every time she brings this up, I find myself going, what are you talking about? Because AHS did identify the capacity and there was never a shortage of ICU beds in the province. There was always surge capacity that was being utilized. And for her to, who are you going to find, Danielle? Because if you can't find staff to work those ICU beds, which is the problem in healthcare right now, what are you going to do? Like, are we going to be conscripting people from the oil fields to try to run a ventilator? Because I don't know. I don't feel super optimistic about that. we've got somebody here and I don't know how long we've got them for. So I'm going to throw it to them right away. Because I imagine they're probably looking at a fairly busy night. But Sarah Biggs, friend of the Breakdown, campaign manager for Leela Ahir. You were the first person to tap in tonight. Everybody else who's tapped in, rest assured, we're going to get to you. We'll be here for as long as we need to be. Fetal position on the floor or something, but you know what? It is what it is. Sarah, what's going on?
I'm tired.
I bet.
I'm very, very, very tired. Had a good cry in the car on my way home, and I grabbed a 10 or a 20 nuggets from McDonald's. I'm going to go put my moo-moo clothes and just sleep for the next 24 hours. I was surprised that we dropped at the first ballot because the intel we had and the points we had internally and with other campaign did not reflect what happened tonight. We knew we would drop second or third. We knew that, right? We're realistic. There's always a little bit of hope. It's always fun when you talk to the bodyguards and you have bodyguards, it's different, right? But, I was making my way out because we were parked at the back and, it was, I would say that the mood on the floor is not exactly, there were a lot of loud people. And I will say that there were a lot of people just sitting there and wondering what they're going to do tomorrow.
Well, this is the interesting piece for me because, Kenny got 51.something% of the
51.4.
There we go. I thought it was 4, but I didn't want to get it wrong. That's what the approval that he got. She got like 2% higher on this vote. And yes, it's a binary, the majority wins thing. But
yeah,
it seems to. One of the things that we've been talking about on the show for a while now is this UCP leadership race is very much defining the soul of the party. And yeah. I think that the campaign that you ran was one that was kind of based on hope. It was kind of based on optimism. It was kind of based on the idea that maybe there's still a little bit of a progressive element.
Smart, real fiscal conservative, but keeping the human at the center, trying to keep the kids safe, the healthcare system safe. There's a lot of policies. We brought up safe supply this summer, and guess what got implemented yesterday?
Well, kind of, sort of.
Kind of, sort of, but it's a first step, right? There's some, there's other policies that the government has implemented recently that we brought to the table. And at the end of the day, a lot of the campaigns, and we're all sitting on the same side, and, I went and sat next to Minister Savage for 5 minutes and we talked and, it's just, I would love to be a fly on the wall at caucus tomorrow morning. I think it's going to be an interesting one and a very long one.
I can only imagine because again, it's one of those ones where the direction that she has stated that she wants to take the party and she seemed to double down on it on her speech tonight.
Well, the party got,
members, you can say decided. It.
No, I still need to be careful because I need to wrap up things. But the people, she expended the base to her advantage. And the party will be changed for a while.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, and this is Wild Rose 2.0.
Yeah, well, I think it's a little bit more than that. But us, as Albertans, will have to decide which direction we will want to take, and how we want to move forward. I'm going to put it in a very, very polite way tonight.
I'll say it because I don't have to be polite. I think that if anything, tonight was an indication. And I got to say, I know that there were people who dumped on your campaign and were saying, oh, there's no progressivism left in the UCP. But clearly there's at least 1.8% progressivism. And well, you tried at the very least.
If you look at Rajan's campaign, Rebecca's campaign, even some of Travis's policies, even some of Brian's policies, everybody brought a little bit of progressive. Were we the closest to the center? 100%. I'm not going to deny that. But, you know, at least we brought the conversation to the table. And I think that's what we need to be, you know, tonight when I'm going to go to bed, this is what I'm going to be the most proud of, is that we ran a clean campaign. We brought the facts on the table. And Nila really, really, really changed the conversations at some very key moments. You know, our hurdles were harder, like from, you know, just getting the signatures to the hacking in October, in August. Nothing was easy, but we swam and we made it to the finish line. And at the end of the day, you know what? I'm going to go to bed a little sad tonight. But it's not because I lost.
I think that's a very you're being far more mature and adult about it than I would be, because I would be dropping up bombs.
I've grown a lot.
I do have two questions for you.
Yeah.
Two questions before you get to the nuggets. I got to get in there. Right. Did you hear?
Did you hear
the make Alberta the freest? What was the next word? Because I haven't had a chance to like really dig into the video, but I swear I heard a word there, and I'm throwing it out to everybody to tell me if I was wrong. When Alberta Smith, or what did you hear?
I was busy talking with caucus.
Okay, that's fair. All right.
So I didn't hear that, but I think you heard it probably right.
That scares the crap out of me. Sarah, I want to thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of what I'm sure is an exhausting and busy night to tag in with the breakdown for a quick sec.
No worries. I'll tag in later. Give me a week or two.
I was going to say, we're every Sunday, you know the drill.
I know the drill. I might try to go to Mexico for a few days.
I think that's probably a good choice. Thank you so much, Sarah.
You're welcome. Have a good night, guys.
Okay.
Bye.
Zad, you're up next.
Thanks. I deliberately stayed away from the machinations this evening. I did look at the UCP Twitter account, which showed a screenshot of the screen for every ballot. So I got to see the five or six ballots as they developed. I'm still working on a question that I've been looking at for a couple of days that might affect whether Danielle Smith can even be sworn in as premier. So it's some legal analysis, which is not really my strength. I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I'm looking at the story that the breakdown is covered and a few other media folks have covered. And this is the $101,000 she's raised through a GoFundMe that was started in September 2021. And the stated objectives of that GoFundMe was to sue the federal government to, one, force them to provide inoculation of the Johnson & Johnson, a.k.a. Janssen, single-shot vaccine, and then also to force the ivermectin outpatient treatment to be applied. So it's a bit of a silly pair of objectives anyways, because Health Canada is looking at both of those. So if you want to sue the federal government, you're trying to get a judge to do what Health Canada is already assessing. So I'm not really sure how it is you're going to persuade a judge to overrule Health Canada's ongoing assessment and say, I want you to do it right now. And then we look at the reporting that comes out of that. And so I'm looking, for example, at CTV's report as of 28 September. And so there's some dispute between the law firm she was first with, what they're saying the money went to and what her campaign is saying the money went to. So the law firm is saying about $10,000 was kept by his firm for exploratory work, and the remaining $90,000 is donated to the JCCF.
Yeah.
And what Smith's campaign said is that $13,000 went to legal bills, $3,000 went to GoFundMe fees, and about $60,000 has gone to the JCCF. And an additional $25,000 remains in trust, which I assume is still with Warnock Anderson, the law firm
that
you started with. So I have one question. And so what she said is she's donated the money to JCCF for the Brian Peckford campaign and the Alberta Doctors campaign.
Which doesn't exist.
Which doesn't exist.
The Peckford one, you can debate that, but the Doctors one literally doesn't exist.
Right, right. So in any case, it's between $60,000 and $90,000 going to JCCF, which is actively suing the government of Alberta on several fronts, including the Ingram versus Alberta lawsuit that is still awaiting a judge's decision. It was last in court in, the parties filed their briefs in July, and so it's the final decision will come from the written briefs. But they're also involved in other lawsuits, including four, defending some of the convoy and some of the COOTS participants. So, you know, one question I have, so, you know, my tantalizing point at the beginning is, how can you be the Premier of Alberta when you funded a law firm that's suing the government of Alberta? Seems to me a bit of a conflict of interest.
I don't think there's any shortage of conflicts of interest. I mean, the GoFundMe piece is pretty obviously, we've got a little bit of an interest in that because we've been banging on that drum for coming up to 4 months now. But yeah, the math doesn't work out. And what I find really interesting is that you pointed out that the law firm is giving different numbers than the campaign. But those two things are literally the same thing. Derek Fromm is the lawyer. He's the lawyer with the law firm.
Right.
Anderson is Rob Anderson, who she gave shout outs to tonight. So the two people who are managing the money from the GoFundMe are also the people who are managing the campaign. And you have to wonder, if they can't get those numbers right, what's even going on? Like, it's a train wreck. There's no question.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, the same Anderson running your campaign is half of the Warnock Anderson law firm that got the money, and yet they can't get their story straight.
This is why it's we've been making jokes about it for weeks now.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, you know, when you want to run as premier, like she apparently she redirected these funds from the GoFundMe because she was about to run for premier, but she made it worse by donating it to JCCF because JCCF is acting against the Alberta government in multiple lawsuits.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, the reality that Albertans are going to have to acclimate themselves to is the fact that Danielle Smith plays by Danielle Smith's rules, and that's the end of the story. And so we see it in the Sovereignty Act. We see it in her approach to AHS, where she continues to defy actual facts. Like, it's just, I'm so beyond myself with that ICU thing. Like, I just wish it would stop because it's just lies. It's absolutely wild to me that she continues to repeat that. And when you frame that within the context again, like the most chilling moment of the whole evening for me was when she threw down her pseudo authoritarian, if you hear people say bad things about me, it's because they're bad people. It's not me. That was, I'm still processing that one. So I don't know how, she's going to, I don't think we can apply the normal rules here anymore.
Actually, I'm going to. So sorry, I don't want to hold up other speakers, but just my two quick points. One is there's a fiduciary responsibility, a big word that I barely understand as a non-lawyer. But if you're going to take an oath to act as the leader of a government, you have a fiduciary responsibility to that government and related to your oath as well. You know, that's another layer. And you can't be doing that while you're funding a lawsuit against that government.
Well, she's openly campaigned as well on dismissing those lawsuits and giving pardons to everybody, even though that's not technically in the premier's powers. But it's not dissonant because she said those things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm, like I said, I'm narrowly looking at money went to JCCF, which is suing the government of Alberta that she wants to be the leader of and has a fiduciary trust for. So I'm just looking at that very narrow part, not her statements, which are
okay,
contradictory. I'm looking at evidence of money going from one place to another, right? I'm just looking at evidence. And then the second thing I've got is just quickly is all through February through May, there were various actions from class action lawsuits, from the Ontario Attorney General, and from the federal government that were freezing and seizing contributions made to GoFundMe and other places for convoy activities. And JCCF is funding or carrying out the defense of various people charged with convoy and COOTS-related offenses. So was this donation to GoFundMe under the guise of getting medical help from Janssen vaccine and ivermectin anti-treatment, was it really to, or in effect, in retrospect, to bypass the freezing of assets that was happening in GoFundMes for the convoy and COOTS folks?
It's going to be fascinating. I mean, my big question remains, you know, she took a GoFundMe that was in effect used for, in statement, its mission purpose was to raise money to fight those things that you described. And then she managed to flip it into a $90,000, presumably a $90,000 tax write-off, wherein she's not going to have to pay income taxes for the next 5-6 years because the JCCF is mind-blowingly still a registered charity. So she's going to get to, she's turned that into her own personal benefit. And it's that's stunning to me is all I have.
Well, there's some guy named Trump in the U.S. that did that, right? He had no governing experience. And he also dabbled money between charitable organizations and his own campaign. So,
yeah, it's true.
Thank you so all the time.
Thanks so much, man. I want to throw it to my friend Carlos next, because I know he has experience living with bad governments more so than most people. So, Carlos, am I reading too much into things, or
no,
should everybody kind of be like, oh shit?
Yeah, you should be.
Okay.
Before we start, can I just say, Deirdre, you were right. You were right. And I'm sorry that I thought you weren't right. I'm just going to say that. But yeah, we need to talk about that speech, eh? We need to talk about that speech. Let's start with, yeah, you kind of, you heard, right? She said country.
Oh, man. No, don't tell me that.
You heard, right?
Oh, crap.
Yeah. And I think today's the day of reckoning for Alberta. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think you're wrong, man.
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm wrong either. That's what So I just want to say everybody just needs to take a deep breath right now. We're going to be fine. But I'm going to say this in a way that might get me canceled, but let's just say it. Albertans may have needed this. You, Nate, and I have talked about 44 years of a single government will do to you. Sometimes you need to let the child fall off the tree so he will stop climbing it. I'm not saying I wanted this to happen, but sometimes that's what it's going to take. But yeah, people need to be careful. That speech scared the hell out of me.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I was listening to it and I'm going like, am I actually hearing this? I'm terrified right now. I don't like this. Maybe I'm just tired.
No, it scared the hell out of me because it felt like I was hearing somebody who was going to expropriate private property. That's how I was feeling right now. Even though, so everybody who doesn't know, I'm from Venezuela. We have a lot of problems down there. Trust me. And that speech felt like authoritarianism. It felt like she was going to ban opposition parties. Which is why I hate it when the NDP does this, like when they just go, oh, our goal is to defeat this. But how are you going to get there? Are you going to ban the NDP from running in the next election? We don't know. So I just want to offer some caution to everybody. Make sure you do what you need to do to keep yourself safe. Hug your Star Trek pillows if you have one. I'm not saying I speak from experience, but I'm speaking from experience.
I'm going on Amazon tonight to get one, I think.
Get a Star Trek pillow. It's comforting. and think about what matters to you. To me, it's education. To me, it's being able to live happily and actually freely. And tonight is not the night to go on Twitter rants. Tonight is the night to go to bed, think it out. And tomorrow, everybody raise some hell. Get prepared for the next election. Prepared to fight literally for your life at this point. And I know I'm being melodramatic right now. I don't care because I've seen this path before. And I'm not. I already escaped from one country to go to another one. To have to escape another one. I'm sorry. So yeah, those are my thoughts on it. And if you have any questions for me, let me know.
Well, man, after we have some time, I'm hoping that you'll tag back in on Sunday because, like, Carlos and I have known each other for a little while now. And when it comes, I mean, we debate, we have differences of opinion. But when it comes to, like, oh, shit, that sounds authoritarian, we're usually very much on the same page. That is both good and bad. But because you've lived through it, like, my experience with authoritarianism is almost entirely academic. And so I don't have any lived experience, whereas, you know, you've shared some of the stories about what you and your family have had to navigate and persevere. And I'm always going to defer to lived experience above and beyond. I read a book once.
but I will say what scared the shit the most out of me, I will say, was when she said about the AHS stuff. That's when I was like, whoa, that's Pierre Poilievre levels of I'm going to fire the bank commissioner type crap. So, and now she's the premier. We'll get through it.
We will. But again, I mean, I want to underscore the point that you made, and we were talking about this on Sunday's show as well. Biggest thing everybody needs to do is get engaged. This is now as we don't complacency at this point is a luxury. And it's a luxury that we don't have because we have a premier who just talked about making Alberta the freest country in the world. And if that was Freudian, not cool. And if it wasn't Freudian, not cool. So people need to show up in every way that they can. is my takeaway. James, you've had your hand up for a while there. I appreciate your patience. What do you got, man?
Just an observer from the great province of Saskatchewan, proud progressive conservative for many, many, many years. My uncle went in as a member of parliament in 1958 with John Diefenbaker and stayed there until 1984. So I have a little bit of experience in the political arena and just observations from where I am here and, you know, take it for what it is that has some appreciation for the how the cards may fall in the coming days, if not weeks, months, and years. So I do think that there is a challenge here. You know, for all of the bluster that initially came out, and we heard that Danielle Smith was so far ahead, to have it go to the sixth round, I think really speaks volumes. The fact that Travis Toews was close, and I don't think it's a decisive win. Let's face facts. As Sarah pointed out, right, we have just a couple points over and above what Jason Kenney had. And to say that, you know, you warmed the hearts and minds of Albertans with 42,000 people voting, yeah, that's not exactly the endorsement I'm looking for, right? So how do I unpack part of this? Like any good Saskatchewan boy, I have a lot of friends and family who are deeply engaged and immersed into the Alberta landscape. We have, it's such a cross-border thing with us, it's not even funny. But so I think the Floydian slip that was ushered forward is something to certainly pay attention to, right? Because I have heard even more in-depth conversations, academic conversations about what a republic might look like, right? And I thought that to be very interesting, and I won't necessarily unpack it beyond that, but let it just be said that there are some very learned individuals who have an eye and a view, and I think purposefully might be pushing for a republic of the West. So let that kind of sink in. But further to this, I do think we see throughout Canada that healthcare is challenged, right? We know that COVID, even before COVID,
it's global.
It was. But from the Canadian context, you know, in 2016, 2015, we had hallway medicine in many jurisdictions throughout our land, right? And then COVID came around and we had absolutely no elasticity. We had no give. And so the directions that were taken were challenged, to be sure, and people were trying to navigate it as best as possible. But clearly we saw where the mistakes had been made. So now I think from the Alberta context, as she wishes to pursue a maybe more stronger authoritarian direction over AHS, I think can really lend itself to being problematic, because I think if she goes too heavy-handed, she just might end up in a general strike. And if there is something that, like, we all kind of have an eye on COVID and other things, but let's take something that we're not even anticipating. Let's say that all of a sudden we have a fairly significant cold event this winter, which can happen on occasion. And let's say that infrastructure doesn't quite hold up to the degree that it has. And say if all of a sudden we get into the situation where the services that we hope are there at our ready start to crumble. And all of a sudden now we've been very stern and hard to this entity that we've wanted to be our frontline services, and we've asked a lot from them, and now we're trying to dictate to them what to do. I don't know where the bend is in that, right? And I think what ends up happening is there's always that potential to have a strike that is monumental. Like, I know that the NDP, which, you know, I don't hold no water for them, but I do hear that they thought that, you know, education might be the breaking point for the public. No, public doesn't give two shits about teachers to the same degree that they do about healthcare workers, right? Because it affects me. It's how does it affect me? And so I think it's something that as Albertans and as Canadians, we should all kind of really watch how these events unfold. As I say, the next 12 hours in Alberta will be monumental. Will be monumental. And I don't know too many political strategists that will be taking having a much sleep in the next 12 hours. So just thought I'd kind of give a few of my observations. I'm deeply interested to kind of listen to what some of the other perspectives are. So just out of curiosity, who was Sarah offering her services with? Which one of the campaigns?
Sarah was the campaign manager for Leela here.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure. So yep. Anyways, yeah, you know, like I said, for somebody who was supposed to have won with a convincing victory and for it to go down to the sixth ballot, I don't exactly think that's warming the hearts and minds of Albertans. So
yeah, I know it's a far cry from a mandate for sure. I'm watching my friend Sean over here and his hand thing is going nuts. So I'm gonna reiterate, everybody's gonna get a chance to speak. We're working our way through the list here, but I don't want Sean to have any sort of medical emergency or anything like that. So, Sean, I'm going to bring it to you next. What's going on, my friend?
Well, I have to get my hand up before Jeremy did here. So Ziad and I are both engineers, like to dabble in law on Twitter. And I think there's just a couple things he mentioned before that it, with respect to precedent of ministers and lawsuits and JCCF. So one of the first things that the UCP government did when they were elected was to introduce Bill 8, which was to undo the protections for GSAs in Alberta. And prior to the election, JCCF was launching a lawsuit against the government, against at the time the NDP government, to try and undo the GSA protections. And for example, Parents for Choice in Education was one of the parties to that lawsuit that JCCF was representing. And so Parents for Choice in Education was meeting with the Minister of Education at the time that Bill 8 was being debated in the legislature to repeal the legislation. So there's already plenty of precedent that, you know, there can be ongoing litigation against the government that the government should in theory be defending against that they clearly aren't interested in doing, and they'll just, you know, kind of repeal it and go on. So that I it's kind of shameful, I think, but there's lots of precedent for that that happening. It kind of goes to James's, I think it was James Harvey's statement about education and the interest in that. So there's the Facebook group parent or Albertans Against the Curriculum Draft, and that had 40,000 Albertans join in a matter of like 72 hours. So I don't want to understate the interest that Albertans have in healthcare. However, in the past, you know, 12, 24 months, there's been a huge interest in the UCP's attack on the education system, on the public education system, from conservatives across the, Albertans across the political spectrum, rural, urban, and Smith has been very kind of committed to following kind of the most radical interpretation, which has kind of been like widely rejected by a lot of Albertans. So I think she underestimates how much blowback she will get from that approach to education. So yeah, that's what I kind of my thoughts on that.
Cool. Yeah, it's going to be. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is that Smith has operated, I think, in a lot of ways in this, I hate to use the word echo chamber or silo, but there's this sort of self-affirming. Her audience never says, oh, Danielle, I don't like you. I mean, not since she left elected life. Air quotes in that one for everybody who... You can't see my hands right now. But ever since she left elected life, she's been in this silo where her radio show had a fawning audience that approved of everything that she said. And when she left 770, she had, again, she even almost hyperpolarized that silo, because now she was speaking only to the people who wanted to hear her speak. And I think that sort of reinforced a lot of her beliefs about things and stuff. And the only thing that I have hope in, well, I shouldn't say the only thing, the biggest thing that I have hope in tonight is that I know that there are way more amazing Albertans out there than the ones that supported Smith in this endeavor and the ones that will support her. And I'm still going to continue to put my faith in them. Mr. Appel, what do you have tonight? Or Apple. I don't know which one it is.
It's Appel. You got it right the first time.
Okay.
I think you may know what question I'm going to ask. You and many other people, you know, in this chat were advocates of purchasing a UCP membership to participate in the democratic process, and as a means of harm reduction, to vote for the least bad candidate. I think that's a reasonable summary of your position. But I was wondering, do you regret that decision, given that the candidate who you were rallying behind failed quite horribly, to be blunt?
No, I don't at all. And I think that that's a characterization of it. I think that anytime somebody decides that they're going to try to make things better, whether or not, and I was very candid about this. I'm going to let Deirdre speak to this as well, because I know she's got some thoughts too. But I think anytime somebody's trying to do better, regardless of what the odds are, there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I'm going to try to help you in the ways that I can. In my position, I had a leftover UCP membership from the very generous support that we received during the last UCP AGM. So I didn't even have to go out of pocket on it. But I do believe that it is an incredibly cynical approach to tell anyone that they shouldn't be engaging in the democratic process because they believe that the outcome is predetermined or inevitable. That's how we breed voter apathy. That's how we breed disengagement in the system. And I think that the only way that anything ever gets better is if people stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to try. And I don't think anyone should ever be faulted for trying to make things better. Deirdre, I'm going to tap in here.
Which part was mischaracterization?
I don't think she failed miserably. I think that anytime this is a mentality that personally drives me a little bit nuts. And so I'm going to do a very short bit on it, and then I'm going to throw it to Deirdre. But the notion that someone puts themselves in a position where they're going to run for any form of public office, that in and of itself is the success. Whether or not they're elected, I mean, obviously the goal is to be elected, but you can talk to any number of elected officials. Talk to anybody who runs for the Green Party. Talk to anybody who ran for the Liberal Party in the last election, and they will tell you that they ran because they wanted to make sure that the people who wanted to vote for a Green candidate or a Liberal candidate had that candidate to vote for. They ran because they wanted to advance particular ideas inside of that race. And to say that if you don't believe with 100% certainty that you're going to win, that you have no business being a part of the democratic process, to me, denigrates the entire democratic process.
And I'm
Deirdre,
going to
go
just,
ahead.
I'm going to throw it at Jeremy there for a second, because Jeremy, you used to live in rural Alberta. I'm sure that you didn't, that you weren't a conservative supporter. And did you feel like you wasted your time going to vote in provincial elections when you weren't voting for the conservative candidate?
Well, no, because I wasn't giving money to a party who
all political.
That's such a flawed argument, man. You talk to anybody who's ever worked internally on a political party, and they will tell you that memberships are cost recovery. That's it. There's no political party that's making crazy money from a $10 membership. That's a profoundly flawed argument.
But you don't feel like you've contributed at all to Danielle Smith's war chest. I understand, Nate, that you didn't personally need to purchase a membership.
No, I don't feel that way, Jeremy. And again, your argument is a zero sum argument that it eventually only leads to voter apathy. Because if you try to support a thing and it turns out to be something that you didn't want, if you try to support a person who's merely advocating for higher values or higher ideals or higher policy, if you try to support that person and it doesn't assuredly work out, then you've somehow contributed to the problem. This is a very disingenuous argument.
Well, I don't think it's disingenuous, but I do see your point it's about participating in the democratic process, that you're not you know, it's perhaps an oversimplification that you're just giving money to the UCP. But so did you join the UCP in 2017 to vote for Schweitzer?
No, in 2017. Dear, you can take this one.
Yeah, wait, so what was I'm confused about the
Jeremy, in 2017, I was getting ready to run myself. I wasn't voting for any other parties. I was writing policy for another provincial party. So
that was a bit before my time, to be fair.
Yeah. So the first party membership that I ever bought, I believe, was I bought a membership in the federal NDP. And then I had bought a membership in the Alberta Party. And then I started getting emails from the provincial NDP, and I found out that I was also a member of the provincial NDP, which I was like, ooh, is that a bad thing? And then I just kind of, you know, I was like, I can be a member of all parties. And so I did. I bought memberships in all of the parties. I voted in the 2017 Liberal, the Alberta Liberal Party leadership. I also worked on a campaign. I voted in the Alberta Party's 2018 leadership race. I didn't vote in the UCP's in 2017 because at that point I kind of thought that I should just be, you know, like neutral. I was only buying memberships so that I could attend all the events. But then I thought, after a bit, I was like, but I can vote. That's a thing. I have a membership. I can vote. So why don't I? Right? Why don't I look at all these policies and decide whether or not I actually like them? So again, I'm not your average, like I'm not partisan enough to say none of these parties should exist. I'm not partisan enough to say there's no value to a Conservative Party or an NDP or a Green or a Liberal or whatever. I think that we get value from having a multi-party system. And I don't have any issues participating in those parties because of the fact that I think they all have value. So that's really where I stand, but it's not a normal stance. And I understand that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Deirdre. I think that the we have this desire to turn political parties or organizations or XYZ into some form of monolith because it makes it easier for us to understand. It makes it easier to judge it. It makes it easier to accept it or reject it. And I don't want to live in a world that's binary. I think that there's a lot of things for which Leela here has advocated for that I can respect. And I've said it on the show before that even Rajan, there's a lot of things that I disagree with Rajan on, but she has never lied to me. And I can respect that. I don't have to live in a world where I have to demonize people just because it makes it easier for me to process things. I think people need to embrace complexity, and I think people need to embrace nuance. And I don't think, I mean, at the end of the day, there's no question, and I've been saying this for weeks, that this election was about what is the soul of the UCP going to be going forward. Uh-huh. That's the bottom line. That question got answered tonight resoundingly, yeah. And that's okay, because now I think it's very, very clear, you know, just what the priorities are and what they need to be. But I am never going to be, I never want to be the person who said, well, I didn't try, so, oh, well, it's not worth it. That to me is, I'm probably going to get some flack for this as well, I'm sure. But I respect Leela here. It took her a while to get to a place where she would call the things out that she needed to call them out. And I can respect and understand some of the motivations that drove that. Because she had invested a whole lot of time and energy into a thing, and that thing became something that she didn't recognize anymore. And when that happens, when somebody sees something go through that transition, there is always going to be a little bit of, I don't want to believe that this is where we've come to. And when she did get to that place where she said, yeah, this is where we've come to, she said, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to fight for it. I'm going to try to fight for the values that I believe in. And I don't think, I mean, Sarah even said earlier in the conversation tonight that she fully knew they were going to get out second, third round. That battle was always about standing for some ideals. And you're not going to win that battle every time. So I don't see that there's any, again, it comes back to that. If we're going to get to a place where we're discouraging people from engaging in the economic democratic process, because they bought a membership, which is a cost recovery exercise. Many people who are internal to political parties have said as much. They don't make money off their memberships. If we're going to denigrate people for spending that $10 for trying to say, what if, and for being a little hopeful and for being a little aspirational, we've already lost the plot. Danielle Smith has already won. She's going to be in office forever. Sean Dunn, you got your hand up again.
Yeah, I'm going to respond to my thoughts and Jeremy's here. I thought into that, and maybe it's kind of infantilizing towards politicians, but you know, I look at it as you know, sticks and carrots, and if they see that they can play the populist card to pass that gate of winning the party nomination, and then they can go on to worry about the general, it creates that incentive to play every populist card they can to win their party nomination. So I think there's a case to be made for repudiating that at the earliest stage that it can be, and say, no, that will not work. You cannot play the populist card because it will not even get you past your party nomination. And, you know, to encourage people to, you know, I mean, to participate in a party nomination process and say that, and vote against that, I think that's okay in the sense that we say that this is not something we will tolerate, because otherwise they'll say, well, you know, we can just get, you know, all we need to do is win the not party nomination and we'll worry about the general and we can play every populist trick we can to do that. And if we say that, you know, that's not going to work, then I think that's kind of an acceptable message we can send to people who are willing to do that, to repudiate it as early as we can.
Okay. I'm a big believer, and I live by this. At the end of the day, decisions are made by those that show up. And they don't always get full control over the decision, but at least they get a say at the table. And this is why you'll hear politicians and political strategists go back to that maxim over and over and over again. And it's because it's true. There's different ways, I would argue as well, that you can be engaged and you can say to those people, hey, this isn't cool. But I do also think that I take a look at the two leadership candidates whose character I respect the most coming out of this leadership race. One of them didn't even make it all the way into the race. And at the very least, while I disagree with all of his policies and his ideas, at the end of the day, Bill Rock was still willing to show up and have a conversation. And he was willing to have an uncomfortable conversation. I mean, I don't think anybody comes on the breakdown, especially if they're coming from a conservative background, expecting that the conversation is just going to be, oh, tell me about your hopes and your dreams. That's not what's going to happen. And they know that. And when somebody still shows up for that, as Leela here has twice, I respect the hell out of that. Other leadership candidates, they declined, and that's their prerogative because they were trying very hard to stay on message and they didn't want to have a challenging conversation or a potentially damaging conversation. That's fine. But I don't think that the efforts of anyone involved in the breakdown, and I've been very, very clear about this multiple times, especially over the last couple of weeks, the advocacy and the engagement that goes on there, it covers different avenues. And to try to distill someone's engagement in the democratic process to only the one thing, which again, I maintain is a profoundly flawed argument because they don't make any money off of it. It's it's just a, it's, to me, it's a lazy argument. Chad, you got your hand up pretty quick there. What's going on?
Hey, but guys, thanks for doing this. It's cathartic in some ways. Hey, mm-hmm. I have some thoughts in regards to the membership and everything. And, you know, there's, I think there's, I don't intend to both sides it, but I like the way the NDP have their policy set that you can't be a member of another party. Mainly because you have folks that, you know, if they are NDPers, they identify as NDPers, you know, and they are, I wouldn't say loyal to the party, but they are committed to the party. And, you know, when we have the UCP, that how many memberships were sold here in the last, you know, 6 months is unreal. And, you know, how many people that voted are actual UCPers, and you can speak to, you know, if there was a policy like that in place, I would say maybe Danielle Smith wouldn't have won tonight, because, you know, she went out and she found the fringe voters.
And I think it's safe to say, though, that those fringe voters aren't a member of the NDP.
No, I wouldn't say that either, right? You know, but they probably are, you know, were they a member of another party? I don't know. I'm not saying it could be the NDP, right? But no, I think that the bunch is, it's the party stolen from what it should, what, you know, what it was in even 2019, you know, a party that won an election, they, you know, more or less have served the province. You know, I think that this is now an unelectable party.
I hope you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, candidly, I really do hope you're right, because I think that, you know, again, as we started this conversation off tonight, Danielle Smith's acceptance speech was absolutely chilling. And when she started to talk about the fact that she knows people are going to say bad things about her and her policies and don't believe them, that was a level.
Oh,
of,
that's a Trump style playbook.
Oh, that was preemptive. And it creates the environment within her party and within her base for them to now, anything negative they hear about Danielle Smith, well, that's just part of the establishment. I guess she actually said that. but that's the thing that was most chilling for me. But I'm going to go ahead and challenge you just a little bit on there, Chad, because I would also argue that as much as the UCP has become something other than what its membership intended, there's a lot of people who would say the same thing about the current incarnation of the NDP. And I think that this is something that all political parties inevitably grapple with. Mm-hmm. And it's a conflict that arises in all political parties. I don't think any political parties are immune to it, but I think it's how they handle that conflict that is going to define them. And I mean, of the available options currently, there's really only one. I mean, I like Barry and I like Kerry, but the Alberta Party has not done a great job of establishing its brand. And despite having like the best brand in Alberta politics, I cannot wrap my head around it. But I don't think that they're going to be major contenders in the next election. I think they've got what, 3 candidates nominated at this point. So that's
pretty weak. And you know, I feel that, you know, come next week or even the week after, perhaps the Alberta Party might even have representation in the House.
Right. That's what I was going to say next. Because I think that, and this is an important part of the conversation, I do believe that there are elements of the UCP that far more align with the progressive conservative mentality than what Smith is bringing to the table. And I think that those people are, in the same way that when Kenny took over, we saw mass exodus of PCs. I think that those PCs who don't have that label anymore, those that are left in the UCP, are likely going to be looking for a new home. And I certainly think I'm going to be watching with great curiosity what happens next with Leela here. Because Smith has made it pretty darn clear how she feels about Leela here. So there's lots of speculation, but I think that the next 3-4 weeks in politics are going to be, it blows my mind that we've been doing the show for almost 4 years now And at no point have we been able to say, oh, things are going to normalize now. Things will get less crazy because it just keeps getting crazier and crazier. So that's,
and I mean, I don't want to, like, circling back on the whole membership thing. I'm not, you know, giving you guys shit for signing up for the,
oh, you can,
or anything like that. No, I mean, I'm really not. I mean, but the bottom line is that vote wasn't anything close to democratic. You had to pay to play. And that's not the meaning of democracy at all. So, I mean, to participate in democracy is to go to the GE and vote and do your part. But to have to be expected to pay $10 to be in that vote, that's not democratic.
Okay. So I'm curious then, just because you teed me up for this one, man, so I can't let it go by.
Give her.
Y'all have a policy convention coming up, right? Can anybody vote in that?
Well, that's a little different, though, isn't it? We're not voting for, because you're voting on policy. You're not voting on the leadership, right? Like, you're not voting on who's going to be the next premier. And
I would go to the presentation that Dr. Wesley gave just last night, I think it was, where he was very, very clear. You can dislike the mechanisms that have brought us to the situation where the UCP have gotten to choose the next premier by way of this process. You can dislike that all you want, but everybody on that panel last night agreed, and these were people who are way smarter than me, agreed it was democratic. You might not like it, but it was democratic. Because it was an internal.
I missed that, actually. So,
oh, it's totally, if you can find it, I would highly recommend it because I love listening to smart people talk.
Is it on YouTube or where can, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only person that hasn't seen it. So where do you find it?
I will.
For it, go so, ahead, Deirdre.
Yeah, I was signed up for it. So I think we've got a link, an after link to it.
Oh, okay.
But I'll look for it. But one thing that I do want to say as well is that this, you know, the idea that a political party exists and really is anything without members, because it is about who shows up. You know, it was Gil McGowan who actually brought this into my head, and he was saying that political parties aren't public forums. They are not, you know, they're not looking for public input. They just, you know, they are avenue for political ideology and to advance, you know, policies that they agree with. But the thing is that if everyone, you know, who purchases a membership in a party, and you've heard the term before, the old guard, right? When those people resign and new people come in, the party changes. And so the party is who shows up. Who shows up, that's the party. It may have, I mean, the Alberta Party was a separatist party until a group of people who were like, we really want the Alberta Party name, showed up and said, you know what? We want this party. We're going to vote on the board. They took the party over and they made it into something else. Parties, they're not animate things unless there are people in them. So that's just, you know, that's kind of something that the membership absolutely matters. Yes, it does. Who's running the show? Who's actually behind the scenes? And, you know, you can have 120,000 members, but you've only got an executive of 23 and you have one leader, right? Like, so I don't care how many members you have in your party, like, they're not running the show. And the political party is just a vehicle that takes on members, and those members put forward policy, and the party can absolutely change. The UCP was not something that, you know, it was literally just built. It was here we go, we're sticking it with this Wild Rose policy and this PC policy, and this is going to be our party. It's a baby. It wasn't hard to take over, especially during the pandemic when half of the MLAs were like, you know, I don't like anything that you're doing. Kenny, you should go. We're not going to stand behind you anymore. Like, it was a farce to begin with. But
yeah, it's very fair points, Deirdre. Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to throw it. I mean, you, this is this. The transition here is made because we have two very, 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 very smart people that I want to get in, and then I'm going to get to Cassandra because she's been waiting patiently for a bit. But where, if we're going to talk about the history of Alberta talk, politics, if we're going to talk about the importance of engagement in political parties and the structures that define political parties, Mr. Reboot Alberta himself, Ken Chapman. Is been patiently waiting with his hand up. Mr. Chapman, how are you doing, sir?
I don't mind my second cup of tea. I'm just doing fine. Okay. I'm impressed by the conversation, folks. A couple of things that, Deirdre, you're right. I was the guy that negotiated with the Separatist Party to take over the name. And how it was done is a bunch of grumpy old men who met once a year and told each other how bad the world was but didn't want to do anything. And so we said to them, we could just join your board and we could take it over that way. You could just give it to us. And they were too lazy to have us fight it, so they just gave it to us. Okay. But we kept a couple of them on the board because we said, we are totally opposed to everything you stand for, but we want your name. And that's how it really happened. But that's neither here nor there. I want to pick up on the, Nate, you did a really good piece on the $100,000 GoFundMe thing that Danielle's in there. There's no problem with her putting that money into the JCCF and supporting those other lawsuits. And she doesn't have any accountability with this GoFundMe stuff. But the only thing that I think she's got a conflict in legally, I'm a retired lawyer, folks. So the only thing she's got a conflict in, and it's only a moral conflict, not a legal conflict, is she's going to get the tax receipt.
Right.
Okay. The people who donate through those things don't get tax receipts. But she's going to get it because she's donating to, and that's the thing, only thing that sticks in my craw on a legal basis. There's no reason why she can't be part of a lawsuit against the province at that stage in her life. But she's not the plaintiff. She's just simply putting money into those to existing actions that they were taking and giving them money to support those existing actions. So she's not going to be a party to those actions at all. She's just supporting them. So there's nothing illegal about it, and the only immorality of it, she's going to get a tax receipt for the donation because the money's coming in through her name. And if she was using that for her campaign purposes, then she'd have to account for it through the provincial legislation. And she couldn't, there's just too much money in there. She couldn't account for it. So it's never going to go into her campaign because it would be totally illegal. And she'd get caught on it. So just to clarify that, is that those, and the issue of the convoy stuff, the reason it's being challenged is because the illegal actions that were taken by the convoy people at the time, and that people gave money when they weren't illegal, and they kept getting money when they did go illegal, and that's what caused them to freeze the money, because they were funding a criminal activity then, and it was the GoFundMe people that had the problem, not the donors. Okay,
yeah,
because they were funding illegal activities.
And well, I think it's important to note when we talk about the bank freezing as well, I'm 99% sure I'm getting this right, but if I'm wrong, nobody please sue me. Wink, nudge. But TD actually preemptively froze the accounts before the federal government and the RCMP asked them to, because they didn't want to be party to illegal activities.
And the Bank Act is very clear on those kinds of things. And there's all kinds of issues around money laundering. This was not a money laundering thing, but it was an illegal activity that they were suspicious of. And they only have to be suspicious to freeze it. And if they don't freeze it, then they're liable for it if they found out later, and they should have done something about it. But that's enough of the law on this stuff. And as for political parties, quite frankly, folks, they're just freaking private clubs. They're no different than the Lions Club or the Rotary Club or anything else like that in terms of their legal position, and that they and their number one goal is to win elections, and everything else is just secondary. We have all these processes that we go through in political parties, and I've been involved actively since 1970 in political parties, in a number of them. Essentially, they're private clubs. What we really need to do is we've got to turn them into democratic institutions so they become much more accountable and open and knowing what they're doing. Because they get away with a lot, an awful lot. All of them do. But that's the stuff I wanted to say. And as for what we've got here is that Ralph Klein quit in 2005 with a 55% popular vote on his leadership, on the leadership review. This is essentially a leadership review that we have here. We look at it as a leadership selection, but it really is, who do we want as that leader? And having that lower, that not a bad turnout, 69% turnout isn't bad, but to have for all the strengths that she had and all the capacity and background that she had to only come up with that level and have to go to the sixth ballot, this party is not unified. They're still fragmented. And Brian Jean has already said, according to the Western Standard, that he's put his campaign on pause. He hasn't conceded, and he's looking at irregularity. So we're likely going to have Brian Jean taking on as to whether or not there are irregularities in the vote, maybe, and challenging the results. I wouldn't be surprised. He's already put a complaint into the Elections Alberta over one credit card being used to purchase 4,000 votes or something, 4,000 memberships or something like that. And that's still under investigation at Elections Alberta. So I think that there's no unity there. There is momentum, and they're organized. They're well funded, and they're very well organized. Nobody else is. The NDP is well funded, but I'm not sure how organized they are yet. But they'll get there. And if we're going to go for a two-party system, then we should just watch what's happening in the United States and take lessons out of that. That's basically what I've got to say. But thanks for doing this. This is really the first time I've been on, but I've really been interested in the quality of the conversation.
Oh, thanks, Ray. Can I, from somebody with your experience in all of the arenas, that's a very generous thing for you to say. Thank you.
Well, it's not generous; it's just true. Okay.
I'm going to throw it to Cassandra because Dr. Queen has tapped out. So, Cassandra, you've been waiting ever so patiently. Thank you so much for your patience. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, I wanted to go back to the membership question, and I just want to make a quick comment to Ken. The NDP is very organized. I know that. but it's not something you necessarily see on the surface. A lot of focus has been on this UCP, but in regards to the membership question, I really like that you promoted people, you know, participating in this UCP, like getting a membership and voting for the next leader for the very reason you said, like the fact that you're voting for the next premier, regardless if there's going to be an election in a few months, that person was going to be the next premier. So I supported that. I didn't do it myself because I didn't want to give up my own membership in my own party. But I like the idea that other people might have listened to you and gone ahead and did that. And one of the reasons, aside from the obvious, is the drum that I often beat is that I think too many people, and this is a lot of what's wrong with our politics, too many people don't really understand how the political process works. And so when something doesn't go quite the way they think it should, that often feeds whatever anger and dissatisfaction they have. And I really like to promote the idea of go out, join a political party. We all have some idea of where we think our political values lie. Go out and join that party. Get involved, learn about how that process works, because so many people don't know. Learn how it works. Become engaged in it on that level. Volunteer, because you're going to learn. You're going to go to conventions. You're going to go to councils. You're going to go and learn how policy is built and made and debated, and how political parties form their ideology or values for elections and how they dream up these things. And I think that if we all did that and became more engaged in that in a real way, like the way I said, like not just buying a membership, but doing some volunteer work, going to some political engagement events like your AGM or convention, and learning about how that works would change the way people saw politics. And I think it would take the temperature down too, because people would have a better understanding when people fight for policy or run on a policy and then quite can't get it done. They would have a better understanding of, well, why is it that they couldn't get that done? Or what do we need to do if we want to make sure they get it done? And you know, I think that that's where the disconnect in our whole political life in Canada is right now, and where a lot of this polarization is coming from is just people just not knowing. And so, yeah, I just wanted to bang on that drum. Go out, buy a political membership, any party, whatever one you think best suits you. And if you don't like it, none of them are perfect. You're not going to like, but you can be a part and have a voice in maybe shaping their policy and the direction that you would like to see them go in. But if you don't do that, then you know what I mean? It's never going to be, no party's going to be perfectly what you foresee or want, I guess, if I articulated that well. But that's what I wanted to say.
I love everything that you said there, Cassandra. The only thing, the little thing that I want to try to add to it, if you let me, is in the same sense that I don't think anybody should be criticized for choosing to get engaged in a democratic process. I also don't think anybody should be criticized for choosing to stay with their political party. So,
I agree with you.
Props to you for staying with the NDP. I don't have a problem with that.
Right. No, it's not even about that. I'll tell you something about me. I have actually voted for probably every party. Even I've done protest votes. The place I live now, when I first moved here, I don't know if there was even an NDP. I knew they weren't going to get elected. It was conservative. I went and saw, oh, look, there's a communist. I voted Communist Party just as a protest vote to say anything but conservative for me at the time. But I also liked Ralph Klein and appreciated him. I didn't necessarily agree with him. I voted for Kim Campbell. You know what I mean? I voted liberal. Like I voted for all of the parties. I'm not like super partisan. I've just chosen an umbrella where I think most reflects my values. It's not necessarily if they're doing something where I don't think that they're going in the direction I want. Well, yeah, I might look somewhere else for my vote. I'll still stay engaged and try to, work on policies and shaping the direction, but if it's not going that direction, maybe that net election, the next election, I don't vote for them. You know what I mean? I think it needs to be nuanced. We all need to, I think it's the engagement that's important.
I totally agree with you. And I think your headset might have gotten unplugged there because we got super tinny all of a sudden. It's all good. We got James back with another hand up here. Oh, we got to approve it. There we go. We got James back with another hand up here. James, you got something to add to that? I think you got to unmute yourself there. Or maybe not.
Or we take a bad time.
Yeah, it could be a bad time. I got one other thing I want to say, and then I want to throw it back to you, Deirdre, because you've had a lot of time to think about your analysis of the overall thing, and I want to hear that. But I want to say one other thing about the voting piece and the supporting a candidate that is in all probability not going to be the successful one. And I'm going to break one of my own rules here and talk about myself for just a minute or two. Obviously, there's some people that aren't aware that in 2019, I ran for the Alberta Party. That was after a few years of being involved and having written policy for the party. And boy, Cassandra, I'll say when you were talking about the process of getting policy written and adopted, that is such a ridiculous meat grinder. There was a couple of policies that I pushed for that ultimately did get adopted that I stand by and I'm very proud of. But getting that done was a contortionist act like I never would have anticipated right up until the policy convention floor. And obviously in 2019, I got my ass kicked. But a week and a half ago, we opened the show with the very first episode of the Breakdown 3¾ years ago. And it talked about the fact that the votes that I did get, which weren't bad, I mean, there's a good number there. I got 10%. I'll take that. But that the fact that there were a group of people, 10% of people, I think it might have been 11, but I don't want to here nor there, wanted to hear the way that I was talking about things more. That was, in many ways, as well with some pushing from a few people who I absolutely love and adore, that was the impetus for the breakdown. And if everybody had looked at that election and had said, well, the Alberta Party's never going to win. Nate Pike's never going to win. I'm not going to vote for him. If they hadn't have done that, I don't know if the breakdown would be a thing. And so you never know how showing a little bit of support as opposed to writing someone off entirely, what the ripple effects of that are going to be. And I will say, I sincerely hope that Leela here continues on in her public life in some way, because I think that the Leela here that ran in this leadership race is a radically different person than the Leela here who first ran for the Wild Rose. And it's that kind of growth that I've experienced myself, I think. And it's that kind of growth that gives me hope and optimism in the face of what Carlos and I both agree was an unbelievably authoritarian speech from the soon to be premier of Alberta. So there's my little happy, optimistic speech about things. Deirdre, what else you got for this shit show?
I mean, like, we figured that this was going to happen. Even today, I did a with the rundown, CBC Toronto, and I like this evening we did it at like 5:30, I think, and I still didn't actually want to say that Daniel Smith had this wrapped up because I don't like predictions, but I also have this optimism. I have this optimism that maybe something won't be nearly as bad as we think it will. And I prefer that. Now, with that being said, now that Daniel Smith has been elected, well, now we get to look at the realities of what she has been saying that she's going to do. Her speech tonight basically said that absolutely nothing has changed her mind. Everything that she has said she's going to do, she is going to do and more. And, you know, now's the time to get scared, I guess. And now is the time to really pay attention to what she is doing. You know, I'm still fascinated by her, you know, transformation. I want to say transformation. I know that there's part that has always been there. You don't become the leader of the Wild Rose without having some of it already. But at the same time, you know, because I do spend time in these circles. I mean, I live in rural. My circles are mostly all conservative anyways. But because I spend time in these circles, and this has probably been the biggest thing that has changed the way that I feel about, you know, voters and stuff and people who, you know, make the choices that they do with their political votes and political support, is that, you know, people do this for very different reasons. I don't know if Danielle Smith is going to keep the support of her entire caucus. I don't think she is. But will it be enough to keep going? It might be. And so, I mean, I paid a stupid amount of attention to begin with. I'm going to be delving into, you know, deeper things. And just like I said, we have to, you know, what we do from now on is we hold people to account, same as before. You know, get involved locally, get involved provincially, do whatever you think that you can do to help, you know, move everything, move what you want along. And it does, it
I mean, it does take money. It's not the $10 membership. It's more like $10 a month, minimally. And you can stay off the provincial radar. You can stay off with, I believe it's something like $17 a month or something. That's the minimum you can donate to a party without showing up on the radar. Because anything over $250, they will print your name. But, you know, so you can actually split that up into $8.75 to two parties or however many you want to support. But yeah, you are going to have to support the parties that you want to do better. You're going to have to support candidates that you want to do better. And yeah, I guess good luck to all of us with that.
I want to add on to that because, I mean, Mr. Chapman, after 2019, he and I had a conversation that was quite inspirational to me, in that he was talking about the idea of engaged citizenship. And he was talking about the idea that we have this sort of problem where the understanding of citizenship is this sort of la la la, I'll do whatever. And the reality is democracy is an incredibly fragile thing. And I think that we forget that because we've had it so good for so long. And it does require active citizenship. And that can come in a lot of different ways. But the biggest thing that I want to add on to what you said there, and to some degree what Cassandra said there, and what a few other people have said about get involved and get engaged with political parties, it doesn't stop with supporting them. It also continues with holding them to account. And I mean, I like Rachel Notley. I've had a conversation with her. It was quite pleasant. There's some backstory that goes much farther back. Her mom used to babysit me. So I think that she has, and the NDP in many ways have, many of the makings of what Alberta needs. But we've also seen that they've crossed the line in other places. And the notion that anybody who's an active citizen or practicing active citizenship, to steal Ken's line, just turns a blind eye to things is deeply, deeply, deeply problematic. We have to be able to say, hey, you know what? I love some of the things you're doing, but that part's not cool. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to say that, because otherwise it becomes again that silo that consolidates power within itself, and it's not any good. And I think that we just have to get better at practicing saying, hey, I think maybe what you're doing there is kind of not cool, and I'd like you to stop, please. And I mean, there's a wonderful, I go back to the West Wing all the time, but there's a wonderful bit in the West Wing where Bartlett, President Bartlett's trying to say, well, I'm going to do XYZ. And his chief of staff, who's his best friend in the world, says to him, if you want to go do that thing, you can do that. You can order the army to go and do that thing. But I need you to know that if you do, I will raise up an army myself and I will stop you. And I think that that gets to the core of the kind of ethos that we need to be seeing more of. We have to be able to tell our friends when they're right. We have to be able to tell our friends when they're wrong. Mr. Pell, you have your hand up again.
Yes. I was just wondering if you could clarify. You said you like Rachel Notley, but she crossed a line. I'm just wondering what line you're referring to and how she crossed it.
Well, we did like four episodes on it. there's lots of examples. I mean, at the end of the day, to me, thank you, Chad. At the end of the day, the bottom line is that if you're going to be responsible for a party, you are to some degree responsible to the actions of that party. And when we had Robin Luff on the show, when we had Stephanie McLean on the show, the Honorable Stephanie McLean on the show, that was where they spoke to the fact that the principles of that party had been compromised for periods of time, and people were treated poorly and people were bullied, and there was regret associated with that. And I really do maintain, we've seen it with the UCP, the culture starts at the top. Mr. Kenny established a very bully-esque culture from day one, and all of his little minions took away from that, that it was okay to do that. And, you know, I'm not going to say, because I don't believe it's true, that Rachel Notley has a culture of bullying, but I do think that there is a culture of control that is antithetical to the stated goals of the NDP in a lot of ways. I think that they're taking some efforts to correct that. I'm not convinced that those efforts are wholehearted enough, I'll say. I remain to be corrected on that. I'm open to being corrected on that. But the reality is that, you know, if you're going to say, hey, we're making sausage, then you have to be able to be willing to show how the sausage is made. And if you can't do that, then maybe there's some time for some conversations. Mr. Chapman, you have your hand up again.
Yeah, I just want to follow up. I was very, very active in the PC party from 1970 to 2009. And I, as a member, an active member of the party, working on the policy committee, I ran the committee for 15 different policy conferences. I sued them successfully 5 times. And I was never kicked out of the party. Pissed a lot of people off. But, I mean, my funnest one was right after the charter with the French language education rights. And there was a bunch of Francophones came to me as an Anglophone lawyer who actually failed grade 12 because of French. Okay. And we took the French language education rights, and the Lougheed government drove us all the way to the Supreme Court, even though it was a right, because nobody was going to force, you know, French down our throats, and I wasn't going to have to learn how to read the other side of the cornflakes box. And Dave King was the Minister of Education at the time, and he said, I can almost get it through cabinet, but I can't get it through caucus. You're going to have to sue me, Ken. And so I did. One of my best friends, I sued him. And that was not seen as untoward. At that time, it pissed people off, but that was the only remedy we had at that time because the politics wasn't working. So I really appreciate what Cassandra said, is join a party. I talk about citizenship before partisanship. You don't have to lose all your values. And I didn't join the UCP this time to vote on this leadership because I know what the principles of their values are, and they are so antithetical to what I believe in. I said, I'm just going to sit this one out because usually I'm like her. I buy a membership and I participate. This time I grappled with it, and for the first time I did not. But that's the situation. So get, if you want to have real influence, join a party. If you want to have real, if you want to have real pressure, join a pressure group. But you'll have a heck of a lot more influence from inside a party if you want to become active. If you're just going to go and write checks and show up a little bit and vote at policy conferences, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to make a difference, the best leverage is through a party system. That's too bad. I think that's not sufficiently. That's not enough. But that's where you get access, and that's the difference. So I prefer to people to be active as their on a citizenship basis, but I don't decry the partisanship. But I agree with Cassandra. If you're going to get involved, don't just be passive about it and be intentional about it. And I'm going to go now. This has been a lot of fun, guys, but I've got work to do. Bye.
That's fair. And I just want to add on to that. I think that we know that if you want to get kicked out of a political party, you have to engage in sketch comedy. We've learned that lesson well here. Bunch of hands went up. Cassandra, I think you were the first. So you want to tap in, and then James, I think you're next. And then Chad, I think you're back. This is great. I'm having a blast tonight. I'm going to step way too late.
Well, I was going to say, I was at the last our last council where we were voting on putting in some new policies and procedures to take care of the issues that you were referring to. And I'm confident that we are moving in the right direction. And that's just my personal take. I do think that we are, you know, we voted on favor of things that put us in the direction of, you know, basically kind of rectifying some of those inequities that had happened. So that's what I wanted to say on that. And there was something that Ken said that I wanted to comment on, and now it left me. It's late at night. It's gone.
It is almost 11:30.
Yeah. but yeah, like, definitely. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Activism. You know, there's another way. Before I became engaged from within the party, I was an activist, and I was a part of activists on causes where we did things like we were able to get laws changed because we put pressure on politicians and we created public pressure. So there are other ways to be an effective citizen if you want to create policy and be part of forming the direction of a certain party. Membership and being actively a member is the best way, but there's also being an activist. I don't think I can say enough about what I've been a part of throughout my life and in accomplishing things that in putting pressure on political parties that were in power to get legislation done and stuff like that. I think that there's a value in that as well.
Some of my favorite people are activists. Some of the people that are most inspiring to me are activists.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you there. James.
Yes, sir. So as somebody who has been around for a period of time, I wholeheartedly agree with the whole concept that at one time there used to be the beautiful art of quiet diplomacy. You know, you used to be able to work the networks of MPs and MLAs and you know, some of us that had either cabinet ministers or policy writers that were the direct, like one phone call away from the big cheese. And so there's always it certainly got harnessed as a lobby activity after a period of time. Not for myself, but I'm saying that's where that art took forward. And to that, I have been part of the arena for a long period of time, and I will say that there was a significant change in my perspective as to. From the Federal Conservative Party, right? When the Federal Conservative, and I'll even back it up to when it was the reform, right? And when they were getting a lot of their kind of early grassroots kind of direction from kind of the Preston Mannings of the world and the Manning Institute, I tend to think what ended up happening is they got really hooked up onto this whole academic experience of political science, which was stay on message, stay on message, stay on message. And it took to the point where you could not no longer go to a EDA meeting or a constituency meeting and have different point of view without somehow your values being questioned, right? But you would all, there was always the capacity that you would get into a certain echelon of a threshold of individuals where you could have frank conversations, right? And it was never with the intent. And it's kind of the beautiful thing of when you can see cabinet and caucus work at its finest, right? If we look at the recent election in Quebec, and we see Mr. Legault right now dealing with a very large cabinet, or a very large caucus, that's problematic. Anytime you have a very large caucus, it becomes, how do you master that? And I think he will do good because of his personality. And that is the one thing where the UCP, as I see it, struggled because they had fundamental to themselves, part of their grassroots kind of policies instilled in this whole leadership review. You know, I think we see many different suggestions that had Jason Kenney not had this as part of his UCP policy, and had he just hung on, there is the potential that he could have won the next general election because of bettering economic activity in the province of Alberta. So there's a lot of those elements that we have to pay attention to, right? And it frustrates me because I think that there is a frankness that is necessary to have in maybe solemn chambers, you know, but to the degree where you, when you're having conversations with those who are making the decisions, you can't always have some kind of purity test that somehow you're going to vote for the opposition types. And like many other people who have had good experiences, I've had a chance to basically have friends in all political parties, right? You just end up finding those who are functional, right? Like, I'm not so partisan to the point where I can't think that in my party that we don't have loose change kicking around in the pocket sometimes. Like, there's just guys and gals that the drawers aren't very full sometimes, right? And then you see the whole how lobbyists take advantage of that, and they pump up their egos, and they're shallow individuals at the best of times. They're not sure of themselves. They've got fortunate in winning an election, and yet here they are. You know, the ego is such a fragile thing. So then I also, that's one observation, is the fact that we can't and we don't have enough earnest conversation within our own ranks and for with the intent of truly appreciating that it is to serve the public, right? So what ends up happening now? Now we seem to have more division, that it's from polar extremes, from the left and from the right, both it's pushing out. And still at that moment, the voter doesn't get served. The citizens don't get served by that. And so then I ask myself, well, are we becoming to the point that we're becoming ungovernable, right? Because there's a lot of dynamics at play here. Are we really paying our politicians a wage that is comparable for their activities? I would say no. I truly would say no. Because if I listen to any of that rhetoric from say the right, that often will bemoan that all politicians are corrupt and dirty, well, then pay them more. What do you expect you're going to get? You pay them peanuts and you're going to get monkeys, right? That's the reality of it. And so at the end of the day, I just wonder how we try and break that chasm where we understand the sole purpose of all of this exercise is to serve the people, right? And so there's a lot of opportunities where our political structure could have really found leadership. But I will say at this day and age, it's a challenge. But as somebody who has ran for a smaller fringe party, and now I work in conjunction with a government, I tell you that it's all the thoughts that I had beforehand are still core values to me. I just get to execute them a lot more effectively by being within the hands of and the levers of power. I choose not to use profit as a motivator for direction. I have a kind of a whimsical, or I'm pretty wisdom based in what I want to derive for this. But anyways, like I said, it's just part of that conversation. I thought this was an interesting group that when we look at this, you know, it's not that I see a challenge and I want to denigrate somebody's point of view. I just think, but how do we become effective in communicating and actually trying to represent the views? And to be sure, you know, in the Western provinces, we have had a level of oppression economically. It hasn't been realized to the degree that that many other jurisdictions have not had the same thing. So anyways, I thank you for your time, and great, continue on with a great program.
Awesome. Thanks, James. Chad, you're up, and then we're going to go to Sunshiny.
Hey, yeah, no, I mean, just really going on that whole conversation about political involvement, and, you know, like, it is so important. Like, if you want to affect change, you have to be in the room where it happens. period, the end. And, you know, my experience is, of course, I mean, like, I mean, anyone that follows me knows, like, I bleed orange, and that's fine. you know, and it's because, you know, I'm inspired by, you know, folks like Janice Irwin and Sarah Hoffman and, you know, and Marie Renaud and all of that, right? Like, you know, they are just such powerhouses and such incredible leaders, you know, like, you know, if I can learn anything from them. And I mean, listen, like, you look at the other side of the bench, there is nothing there to be inspired by. And that's not partisan. It's just the truth. So,
I would agree that there's a lot over there that is very, very disappointing.
I know that Lila here had a fantastic campaign. She worked her ass off, you know, and I really thought, you know, she would be a fantastic leader. And I know of her from a former life of mine where, you know, I know she finished her Bachelor of Music at the U of A, and so did I. And it was in a time that they overlapped. So, like, I understand that. I know who she is. And part of me is just disappointed that she ended up in the UCP camp, where really I think a lot of her values prior to her being in MLA really do align with where she is now. But anyways, that's another conversation for another day. But talking about, you know, being in the room where it happens, and I'm on the CA for my constituency, and, you know, we just had a meeting last month where, you know, the MLA thanked the CA for a couple certain things, and one of the members of the CA said, well, thank you for making it so easy for us to allow you to do whatever, you know, like, at the same thing, like, there is still room for that criticism within that CA and for feedback, and I think that's really, really important. So I don't think that's missing at all. So, you know, maybe that's the experience of James in other places, but, you know, from my experience within that CA, there is room for criticism, there is room for feedback, there is room for suggestions, and as long as you're being genuine and thoughtful and honest about your suggestions and your comments, and you're leaving space for the human on the other side of things as well, you know, shit gets done. And that's the biggest thing. And so, yeah, so my big comments are, if you want to affect change, you have to be in the room where it happens. And that is the biggest, most important thing. You know, it takes a village to get a lot of this stuff done. And this is the big thing that I have, is that, you know, people have been siloed into themselves, into smaller sense communities, or maybe even, like, you know, those communities have been, you know, reduced. And, you know, that's where a lot of the, you know, people go completely batshit. And, you know, you've got to be part of your community. And that's my big thing. And I mean, I will continue to be a community builder that way. And yeah, you've got to be in the room where it happens. Those are my comments. Anyways, thank you so much, Nate, for this. Actually been like one of my favorite spaces you've done, because it's been, you know, very productive, and lots of great comments from a lot of very, very important voices. So yeah, thank you so much to both you and Deidre.
Well, thank you to everybody who's spoken so far. I'm going to put a cap on things after Sunshiny, just because we're coming up to the 2-hour mark, and at some point I have to try to turn this into a podcast. And that's not a small amount of work, but I absolutely, Sunshiny has been so patient, and she's always insightful. And she schooled me beautifully just a few months ago when I misspoke on some things, and I'm very grateful for that. So what do you have tonight?
Oh, I'm sorry. I kept trying to push the button, but it wasn't working. anyway, I have been listening, and a lot of really good comments have been made. But I have to agree with Chad that you need to be in the room if you're going to be part of the decision making. You need to be at the table. You cannot influence from the outside to make all of the changes. You have to be at the table. Now, one of the things that I think continues to surprise me is that the extremism that has been brought into Alberta politics And we already were some of the most extreme provincial politicians around. But the extremism that has been brought in continues to be overlooked. And I think a lot of people don't see, or rather, I think a lot of people see politics as normal and try and add that little fringe element in. And that's not how I see it. I see it that fundamentally things have changed. When you have someone like Danielle Smith, who is getting elected, that says off the wall things like ivermectin is a cure for COVID, and you know she's going to not abide by any of the federal policies that come out and that kind of thing, that's beyond regular politics. This is someone who's completely abandoned regular politics and is now bringing in I guess an element that is subversive, is sabotaging the whole idea of democracy. And one of the things that I've heard people talk about is that there's a number of people that don't understand the process. And it's those people that she's manipulating, that she's championing, and that she is trying to, I guess, exploit to gain more power. And I don't necessarily see people acknowledging that part. And to me, it's the most important part, because politics isn't as usual like it has been in the past. I mean, even with Klein, I didn't feel that politics really had shifted that much. You know, Klein pretty well stuck to the rules. He may not have had the same policies that I would have chosen, certainly not, but he really didn't rock people's world view that democracy was the chosen, I guess, mechanism to govern within Canada. Whereas Danielle Smith, Pierre Poilievre, Jason Kenney, even Brian Jean, to a certain degree, they're challenging that understanding. And I think a lot of people are avoiding that issue and still handling politics as usual, looking at them as, you know, a conservative, or even if they are on the libertarian side, not an extremist. But they are extremists, and we can't approach politics at the moment in Alberta the same way we would 15 years ago, because it's not the same, because we have fundamentally radically extreme people trying to make enormous changes that will undermine democratic principles and democracy in general, not just in Alberta, but across Canada. This is sort of, you know, Alberta has become the Texas of Canada. So Texas is where they're doing all the test cases to undermine American democracy, and Alberta is doing the same here. So that's my 2 cents worth. Maybe 3 or 4 cents.
For what it's worth, I think you hit the nail on the head, especially when you were talking about the fact that, and I really do believe this, and I'm so grateful that you said it. I really do think that there are a lot of people that Danielle Smith has manipulated. I think that there's a lot of people that she has taken advantage of. And I mean, for months now, I've been saying that there are a lot of people who, because of the last 3 years of disaster, feel out of control. And there are people who are taking advantage of that feeling of them being out of control for their own gain. And I can categorically say that I believe that Danielle Smith has done that. And again, we need to look no further than her $90,000 tax break. She's very clearly willing to use people for her own gain. And I think that it is not limited to just the $90,000 tax, potential $90,000 tax break. I think that it also extends very much to the rhetoric that she uses. I mean, the thing that, again, I know I keep saying this over and over and over again, but history has established and taught us very well. What is the tool? What are the tools that authoritarians use? What are the tools that to use Martin Olshinsky's terminology, tyrants use? And I think we should all be very, very concerned when we see people starting to, I mean, even look at those tools, but we saw Danielle Smith pick them up and throw them in a backpack tonight. And that is, boy, that's something that we all need to be paying attention to. And quite frankly, it's something that we need to be resisting. You got something that you want to add on here, Sunshiny? And I'm going to give you the last word of the night before I close it down.
Okay. Yeah, no. And just to add on to what you're saying, what really concerns me is when people talk about, oh, well, you know, look how Kenny turned things around economically and we're making, you know, some financial gains. I think people need to really have the choice put forward to them that, are you willing to watch other people suffer so that you can have a balanced budget, or you can have, you know, financial gain for yourself? Like, are you okay to watch the people who are on AISH, you know, dwindle away and starve to death or be, you know, ejected from their homes, those kinds of things? Are you okay with, you know, much larger numbers of people dying from overdose? Are you okay with children being told to go to school with no masks, no protections, mitigation? Are those all things that you're okay with so that you're paying less for gas and you've got a raise from your boss that covers inflation and, you know, you're stable and you have a job? Like, are those things, are we willing to sacrifice our humanist soul to be financially secure? And that question hasn't been asked, but I hear people sort of allude to it. And, you know, in the past, you know, maybe the conservatives have made some decisions that some people had to struggle with, that kind of thing. But I mean, people are literally dying from some of these decisions. And it's not an exaggeration to say that more people died from COVID than had to. More people are struggling with buying, you know, adequate food and paying for their rent or being able to, you know, even you know, purchase new clothes or the medications that they need, because of some of the decisions that have been made by Kenny. And you've got someone now who's going to come in and make that even worse. And I know someone had said before, I can't remember, that I think it was Chad that said they're unelectable now, but they should have been unelectable 18 months ago. And, you know, I think what we are at now is, this is beyond acceptable. How are we as a society letting people that are this extreme, this radical, this unhinged, this, I don't know, nutty, religious, you know, focused or fundamentalist govern? Because they're not governing for everybody. They're governing for a very small number of people, and everybody else is getting harmed. And if you're not getting harmed a lot, are you willing to say it's okay that some people get harmed? As long as you come out okay. And I think that that is the fundamental question that we need to ask in Alberta politics right now. That, you know, what are you willing to live with? Are you willing to other people suffer so that you don't? Or are we going to band them together and say everybody matters, including the people that piss me off the most? You know, that tell me that they don't want to pay taxes. Well, too freaking bad you're going to pay taxes, because everybody needs a road to drive on. Everybody needs a library to get information from. Everybody needs healthcare. Everybody needs whatever else we have. We've had this discussion. This argument was decided, you know, 155 years ago. So why are we trying to have this discussion again? Like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We just need to continue to repair it. And that's what's being asked of us right now, is to, you know, dump this wheel, this democracy thing, and let's adopt libertarianism. Let's adopt authoritarianism. Let's adopt where nobody has to pay taxes. And we're going to have this free society that no one has to care about anybody else. And people just die from whatever. And you don't have to care, because it's not your problem. And I don't want to live in a society like that.
Neither do I. And I'll tell you.
And I don't think most people do. Like, I think because we don't put that question forward to them, they don't make the choice. And they don't even realize that it is a choice.
I couldn't agree more.
I will call out on both sides, but the rhetoric is a little thick there. Right? It truly is. So the point is if your point of view isn't being absorbed or being appreciated by the masses, what is it that you're not putting forward, right? Because I don't think people who want to have economic opportunity are heathens. You know, the thing you tend to forget sometimes is those with economic capacity really do give a lot back to their community. And so somehow there's this depiction that they're always the mean, evil, grubbing barons that have raped and pillaged the land. No, sometimes people have worked very hard and have saw that purpose, right? And so all I'm saying is that in the land of discussion, tone down part of the political rhetoric to a certain degree and just try and really look at it from... A practical, like I said, take it as you will, but that's my point of view.
See, and I disagree with that. I've been following this for such a long time, and the people that are governing right now are extremists, James. And there are things that I'm not saying that I know Deirdre and Nick know that I'm talking about. I'm trying not to bring religion into it or dominionism and all of those things. But I know most of the people that are in UCP are part of that. And you know, I've alluded to it, but I'm not trying to bring it out. So I don't think that I am being, you know, rhetorically. I'm not trying to use rhetoric to cause commotion. What I'm saying is the commotion's already there. We're just ignoring it. And if we don't pay attention to it, then, you know, our society is going to fall apart. And I'll be honest with you, I am not a socialist. I am a liberal, and I believe in capitalism as long as it's regulated. I don't have an issue with people making money, but I do have an issue with people making money with capitalism when they know, okay, I can do this and make my money, and I will just stick my head into my work and not pay attention to anything else that is going on, and everything around them is falling down.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump in for a sec, just because A, I don't want things getting too heated, and B, because I want to, I do need to bring things to a bit of an end eventually. But I do want to say, Sunshiny, that I think you're actually right, and the reason why I say that is it goes back to the episode 2 weeks ago where I talked about privilege and I talked about the fact that that's a real thing. And there's a lot of people who don't have to choose who can choose Jeopardy. There are people who can make the choice whether or not they're going to be exposed to Jeopardy. And the important part of that is that there's a whole lot of people who can't make that choice. They don't have that luxury. And that's just a reality. And I think that part of what needs to happen is more people who have the ability to choose to accept some Jeopardy in whether or not they're going to push back on these things or not. We need more people starting to choose some Jeopardy who don't have to, who don't have it inflicted on them. I think about the conversations. A lot of people have talked about age tonight. A lot of people have talked about disability tonight. We're seeing plenty of decisions even in the last week in regards to the restructuring of the labs piece. That's going to have a negative impact on people. And we can choose as people. Like, I'm not a cancer patient at the Tom Baker, so I can say, la la la, I get to choose whether or not I'm going to be pissed off about that. But the person who now has to go the extra steps while they're dealing with cancer to get their lab work done, they don't get a choice. And so a big part of what we need to do more as people who get to make the choice is choose to get engaged in these things and choose to push back on these things. And I said it 2 weeks ago, I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to let it be the closing chunk for this show before I let Deirdre say a couple more words, because boy, you haven't talked nearly as much as I was hoping for. The fundamental question that I've been asking myself for the last couple of weeks and the last couple of months is I'm going to paraphrase what you said, because I've already used this line and I think it's a freaking amazing song. But the fundamental question is, do you have enough love in your heart to get your hands dirty? And the reality is we need a lot of dirty hands out there. Deirdre, you got anything to close it up right now?
You know, this has been, I think, the longest time that I've gone, even through other leadership races. Like, this one was a lot. So yeah, I think I'm a little, you know, I'm a little done. I think is kind of what happened with it. It's like, we've been talking about this, and it's finally here. I need a slight break, and then we'll get back to talking about it yet again. I guess, you know, the party system is what it is. We're not getting rid of it anytime soon.
Certainly not before May.
No, that is definitely not going to happen. So, you know, like we're political watchers. We're both, you know, formerly highly engaged within particular parties. And actually it was that engagement that turned me off of being a partisan, actually, is because I saw it. And I also felt like there's an amount of loyalty that was required. And I just can't do that. I want the best government. I don't really care what color their sign is. I'm concerned about Smith, but also I have some hope that there is some effective opposition, and I hope that some of it is going to come from within her own party. That's where it needs to come from. So yeah, I guess I'm going to keep watching. Gonna keep counting the resignations. that actually, though, like I said, it does hurt Danielle Smith. That just allows her to get someone else in that space who's going to support her. And so it's, you know, it's the same sort of thing that that we say with people who are like, I'm getting out of Alberta if, you know, if the UCP wins again. Well, then we've just got less people helping, you know, to keep them accountable. So, yeah, so watching some of these resignations that were coming, Richard Gottfried, you know, I was not happy to see that one. Michaela Glasgow, Frey, you know, I think she got involved because she could. And I mean, maybe she really does have family reasons for wanting to get out. An MLA is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week for 4 years job. So, I mean, she was young. She was pretty young. But seeing Richard Gottfried go, White's gone, that is concerning, right? Because the opposition from within the party is already throwing in the towel. And that worries me more than anything else, to be honest. Participation, you know, from all of us.
Well, you have a good rest. It's Thanksgiving weekend. Enjoy your Thanksgiving weekend.
Adult children and stuff. I'm not getting a rest this weekend. It's really unfair.
make them cook for you.
No, I want a good Thanksgiving dinner.
Craft dinner's not good enough. That's fair.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think one of the last thoughts that I want to leave things with before we go, just because it has been so personal for me for the last couple of weeks, is if you give people something to fight for and you ask them to fight, man, people will show up. And so for everybody who's engaged with your political parties right now, make sure that political party, whether it's the NDP or the Alberta Party and the Liberals, maybe if you're Wexit, don't try so hard. But if you're with any of those parties, make sure that your party is something that people will show up for, because, man, I'll tell you, they will. The people of this are absolutely beautiful, and they have been corrupted. Some of them have been corrupted by this anger, but I really do believe that the best of Alberta is waiting. And so if you're one of those people in the rooms with a seat at the table, don't make them wait. We got 6 months, and there's very bad things happening in this province right now. I'm not even going to do the normal clear the room plug. I'm just going to say thank you to everybody who participated. I mean, I know somebody else said it earlier, this is probably one of the best spaces that we've had. It's going to be a podcast at some point tomorrow. And thank you to everybody for making this conversation as rich and nuanced and kind as it has been. We need more of these conversations. So thank you to everybody for that. That's it for me. Keep the conversation going.
Thank you, Nate. Have a great night.
Thank you, everybody.